You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB At The Plate. MLB At The Plate airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern time on TuneIn.
Welcome into the MLB At The Plate podcast. I'm Holden Kushner. Today I'm joined by LaTroy Hawkins. Now we're going to start the podcast out with the MLB At The Plate triple play. It's where LaTroy and I discuss three topics that interest us. We're going to start the podcast out by discussing Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge's performances at the plate since the All-Star break. We'll also look at what the Houston Astros need to do to get back to being the class of the American League. And we take a look at the wild card races, specifically in the wide open American League.
The MLB At The Plate triple play.
Let's talk about the two hitters we just saw, Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge. The Judge at bat, three pitches, three strikes, sit down. DeGrom just made him, DeGrom was his daddy right there. And this is what pitchers have been doing to Judge since the All-Star break. They've been throwing him up and out of the zone, and they've been throwing him just outside of the zone, not in the middle of the plate, not low and outside in the zone. They're out of the zone, and he's chasing pitches, LaTroy, and that's why he's striking out every single game.
Well, I think that early on, you know, when you're a fan, you're, oh, he's hit home, he's this, he's that. But, you know, the true fans, we understand that there's going to be an adjustment period where the league's going to adjust to him. And what I mean by that is, like, after they get a few hundred bats under his belt, the video's there. His weaknesses will be exposed. I mean, like, exposed like nothing has ever been exposed before. So the pitchers have made an adjustment to him. Now it's time for Judge to make another adjustment. And whether he make that adjustment in the next 7 weeks, I don't know. It's going to be tough because the way we as a society has deemed him the next Derek Jeter, we don't know if that damaged him mentally or not. He could be damaged the way they've embraced him and made him think that he was, you know, he was going to hit 330 for the rest of the season, hit 100 home runs this year.
Yeah, I think the lazy argument is, oh, it was the home run derby. The home run derby is what's got him going. No, I mean, that's just not the case. The fact of the matter is there are charts, and the charts say pitchers are throwing him higher in the zone. He's chasing those pitches, and he's not catching up to him. And they're pitching him lower and outside or belt high and outside and out of the strike zone. Well, you know, he kills pitches that are in the strike zone.
Right, and he hit a lot of mistakes the first half.
Exactly.
He had a lot of mistakes, and he didn't miss. Well, now he's starting to swing at some pitches that aren't strikes, and he's missing the pitches that are strikes. So, you know, it's just a lot of time seeing pitches, watching video, watching what he's doing, and understanding what the opposing pitcher is trying to do to him. Once he understands that, I think he'll start to flourish again. But if you don't understand what they're trying to do to him, he's going up to the plate blind.
And then there's Stanton. I mean, Stanton, boom. You know, he takes Madison Bumgarner, just goes with the pitch. He's just so locked in. And we've talked about this before. Your best hitters, your guys that carry teams, when they're locked in, they can do it 6 to 8 week periods. Now, a cold spell is coming up. There's going to be a time when he's probably not going to be able to do stuff for 3 or 4 weeks. This is what happens. But right now, he's in that zone. And it's very tough to pitch to Giancarlo Stanton because not only because of how great he is, but the point that you made, it's not only Giancarlo Stanton, which is making pitchers have some trouble, it's the guys around him.
Right, and Marcell Ozuna hits, you know, right behind Stanton, and, you know, he has 27 home runs, almost 90 RBIs this year. He's hitting over 300. So, I mean, he's definitely a reason why Stanton is getting so many pitches to hit. Because if you walk him, you have to face Ozuna. And he's having a very good year. Not as many home runs, but far as batting average and RBIs, I mean, he's not leaving many guys on base when he's up there. So, I mean, he definitely puts a threat. He's a threat, and he's a reason why that Stanton's getting better pitches to hit, and Stanton's not missing them this year.
Let's talk about the Astros here for a second, LaTroy. Brad Peacock, 4 2/3, 4 runs. He did strike out 9. He's got a nice 3.30 ERA. Liriano came in, pitched a scoreless inning, but he walked a couple of guys. Their bullpen has gotten progressively worse since 2 spectacular months to start the year. Their starting rotation, unless Dallas Keuchel gets it together, is going to be in shambles. if Keuchel gets it back together, and he told everybody to chill out, kind of like the Aaron Rodgers, relax everybody. Well, Dallas Keuchel's saying the same thing. He thinks he'll be back. If McCullers, after the stint on the DL, is back, then you got one, two terrific pitchers that can keep you in any series. Problem is, it's not like that right now, and their bullpen is a mess. How concerned are you about the Astros, when they make the playoffs, doing anything given their current pitching situation?
Well, hopefully some of those guys will be back. They got 7 weeks to get, well, I'll give them 5 weeks to get back. I mean, they have time. None of those guys are out for the season, I don't think, but that's a good thing. But, I mean, they built themselves such a comfortable lead. I mean, they got time to experiment with some guys and see who they can, you know, who they're going to be able to trust or even count on in the playoffs. And, you know, I'm looking at Peacock's numbers, 4 2/3, 74 runs, one walk, 9 strikeouts. He only threw 89 pitches. With a stat line like that, you would think he threw about 110, but mm-hmm. he threw 89 pitches. But their bullpen, you know, they just struggled. I mean, they played so well the whole season. We talked about this yesterday. They played so well the whole season. That's why you get off to a good start. It gets you well over 500. So when you do go into that little slump that you're going to go in as a team when everybody's, you know, nobody's hitting, nobody's pitching, you're able to survive that. And, you know, they've slumped lately, and they've been able to survive it because they played so well over the first 3.5 months of the season.
Yeah, but how are they going to fix their bullpen? You know, you can experiment all you want. The bullpen's been a mess. And the rotation right now, there's a lot of questions. And the fact of the matter is they've been having talks with the Detroit Tigers about Justin Verlander, and for me, that would put them back in a World Series mix. I think they've got a World Series offense, and their pitching is just not there. Their bullpen scares me. Their bullpen actually scares me more than anything else. It scares me more than their starting pitching, because at least it's a possibility that their starting pitching gets Keuchel and McCullers rolling at the same time. And I like how Morton and Fires have performed so far this season. But their bullpen scares me. Do they have to go out and get Justin Verlander? Do you think they need to do it to make a run and get through the AL?
I mean, it would be nice if they had the, you know, the prospects and able to make a deal for a pitcher like Justin Verlander. Like we were saying earlier, how did he get the deal done? I mean, who do you have to give up to get Justin Verlander with all that money left on his contract? I mean, there's a lot of variables that goes into, you know, making a trade of this magnitude. And, you know, like you said, maybe they want Bregman. Do you give up Bregman? I mean, they got some guys in their minor league. Do you give up the future for a guy? I mean, it's not an easy decision. But if you're in a win now state of mind, I think you need to do whatever you can to bring, you know, another, you know, all-star to this team that's going to help you, you know, get past the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, their window's not closing is the thing. Their window's just opening. So, I mean, that's where they are. But you never know.
The pitching side, man, they're always going to be able to score runs, but good pitching stops good hitting. You want to have some good pitching so you can stop some of that good hitting.
Yeah. I mean, if you're the Astros, you want to go get Yu Darvish this offseason. Or you want to go trade for a pitcher, you know, get someone big and spend the money and put someone there right behind or ahead of Keuchel at this point. But the injuries to Keuchel have really concerned me. He says, chill out. He's going to be back. All right, we'll see if he's back. And we'll see if McCullers is back. Because if those two guys are back, then it's great. Still scares the heck out of me. Why? Because they're bullpen. I mean, it's just, how could it be so great at the beginning of the year and it has turned into just bad? Now it's just bad, bad bullpen recently.
Things just started to snowball and they hadn't been able to right the ship. But that's the same guys that got helped get this team to be, you know, 25 games over 500. And bad pitching, we always said in the bullpen, you know, sitting there, bad pitching is contagious. Good pitching is contagious. So once guy starts going bad, man, you got to hurry up and you know, get out there and try to throw up some zeros so it doesn't start to get going in the wrong direction. And they hadn't been able to do that. But this is the same bullpen and helped them get 25 games over 500. So they definitely do the job. They just hadn't been able to do it.
But Troy, before we went out and did a whole bunch of other things, like listen Aaron Judge strike out on 3 pitches and hear Giancarlo Stanton single off of Madison Bumgarner, we were talking about the AL wild card and the NL wild card. And again, there's only a couple teams that are legitimately out of it. There's only three teams in the American League that have no chance, and that'd be Detroit, Oakland, and the White Sox. And then you go over to the National League, there's a lot more teams that probably have no shot. I think Miami, the Mets, Atlanta, San Diego, Cincinnati, San Francisco, Philadelphia. But, you know, again, you've got teams that are two games under 500, three games under 500, four games under 500 that are still in it. And why do you not like the second wild card, given it gives fans and really players something to play for and be invested in?
You gotta play and be invested no matter what. If the fact that you're in a second wild card so-called race is the only reason you're locked in on baseball, you don't need to be in the big league, because putting on a uniform should be a euphoric high. But I just don't like it. It gives teams false hope. There's a lot of teams that should have been sellers at the deadline, and they were not. Miami should have been a seller. They did sell some guys. You're right. Pittsburgh. I mean, Milwaukee, they're fronting as a team who wanted it. So as soon as the Cubs got hot, they folded like a cheap suit. But I just don't, man, I'm not a fan of it. I like the one, and you play to get in. Oh, Jesus, like an 07. We had a play-in game. We made it in as a wild card team. I mean, two wild cards. So you mean to tell me you could be, let's say there's a year where the team's going to be, Rockies are 66-52, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Arizona 66-53. They might have to play each other for the 20th time this year. Okay.
Okay.
What if the Rockies run away with the first wild card, and then you have a team that's 500 win the second wild card, and then the Rockies lose to that team that was 500? I don't like it. I don't like that. I had to play my butt off, and I had a tougher schedule throughout the season, and then only to have to play a team that was 500 who should be in the playoffs but have the chance. They could play one game out of their mind and end up in the playoffs. I don't like it.
You're also given a massive advantage, though, because if in that scenario, first of all, the better team is playing the game at home, and they'd have the opportunity to set up the pitcher that they want going against that 500 team.
Anything can happen.
You're right. Anything can happen. But, again, this is – and I think you can't tell me that it doesn't give you a little something extra when you go into a clubhouse and you know that at least you're still alive to play in the postseason, as opposed to going into the clubhouse knowing that the year is over.
Well,
Come on. Your
year is never over until the last game of the season, okay?
Well, you're playing
because
more
for you. Because you're playing for something.
Yeah, because you're playing for you. But
whether you're playing for you or not,
you're
still playing for something, and whether it's – yourself or if you're playing well, then I mean the team is going to benefit from you playing well. So it goes hand in hand. I don't think guys going to clubhouse, oh, I'm going to be better today because I'm, you know, we're in the playoff hunt. It doesn't work that way. You go in the locker room with the same mentality every day. I don't care who you're playing or where you're at in the standings, because guess what? If you're at the bottom, a lot of times you go in the clubhouse with like, hey boys, let's win this series. Let's make them cry when they leave town. Let's be the reason why they don't make the playoffs.
All right, so, and then we'll go to the real reason why it was created. It's to keep fan interest. More fans are going to want to watch baseball when their team is still in it. So normally, and
yeah,
there
that's because they're
of
stupid.
Pittsburgh,
that's why.
Well, no. More fans are – listen, Pittsburgh, any other year, well, it's the division. They're still in it in the division.
Tough division.
So that's really not a very good argument. So let's take –
last year was a great argument.
Let's take the Texas Rangers, okay?
Okay.
The Rangers
like
got
that.
No shot of doing anything. They're three games under 500, but they're only three back in a wild card race. If you're a Rangers fan and there wasn't a second wild card, it'd still be five back, but you'd be looking at it like, we don't have a chance. There's so many teams ahead of us. Right now, you're three games out. You're only three games out.
Real
you're
fans understand they don't have a chance.
See, I mean, we say real fans don't understand that they don't have a chance, but they're basically a six-game win streak away from being right a half game or one game out. So, again, we think we know what's going to happen. We think we know the teams that are in and that are out. We think, because they traded Yu Darvish, that was kind of a white flag, but you never really know. You never know. You remember that run the Yankees made last year after the sell-off at the deadline? And they got going, and Yankee fans were all excited about that team. Now, they didn't make the playoffs, but it gave them something to play for. It gave
didn't feel
the fans
like a rebuilding year either.
It didn't. It did. It didn't. It didn't.
Made them feel better about everything that happened.
it's a solid point that you make there. But again,
the only
team
that can happen to is the Yankees.
I think
they can sell it. The only team that could happen to.
The second wild card has just been tremendous. Love it. Love it that it keeps a lot of other teams in it. The one and done, and you were in that game. What was it? Rockies Padres, right? 07?
Yes.
And you won that?
Yes, we won it.
You won it, and you ended up getting to the World Series on top of that. But that was just that was remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And it's a lot of fun to see so many teams that are still in it, especially for my job, because now I have an excuse to go and listen to Tampa Bay and Toronto. Why would I be listening to Tampa Bay and Toronto if neither one of these teams had a chance? And then you'd also brought up the point that
okay,
you know it's not fair to the it's not fair to the teams, it's not fair to the general managers. I think it just makes their job more challenging, and
yes.
the better general managers are going to know what to do for their teams. It's going to keep a star around a team longer. Now, if Pittsburgh would have completely detonated at the beginning of the year, McCutchen could have been out, but they kept with him through the slump, and he's there, and he's paid off, and he's a hero again in Pittsburgh. And it's just great that a guy like that is having success again. And the general manager, they're gonna have to figure out, Neil Huntington, he's got to figure out what they're gonna do in the future. But you know, they kind of stood still at the deadline. They didn't do very much. And you look at the Mets, now even after the waiver, they've given Jay Bruce up. They know where they are. Sandy Alderson and those guys knew where they were. Texas knew where they were. Texas could have made a run at it with Yu Darvish. They could have made a run at it. They thought at the time the best thing was, let's get some good prospects, try and build for next year. And
best
if we
thing
make
for
a run
organization.
Next year, that's fine. Best thing for the organization.
And that's a smart GM being realistic. Being realistic. See, the second wild card makes teams – general man unrealistic, knowing they have no shot when they should be trading off those older guys and bringing in some young guys and building for the next year and the years after that. That's all I'm saying. It puts a general manager in a very tough spot, that second wild card. That's all I'm saying, I got no problem with it.
Good, go out and have go be in a tough spot. I don't give a damn. That's more fun to me.
I love it.
That's more fun to me that you got to make a tough decision. You got to figure out where you are. And now it's the waiver wire deal.
But when
right?
you don't, you kind of put your team back. You set your organization back by not getting rid of a guy who you're not going to re-sign at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. You're not going to re-sign him. And the best thing for you to do is actually trade the guy so you can get prospects for him before you lose him for absolutely pretty much nothing. But the second wild card makes teams like, you know what, we got a chance. And you really don't have a chance because guess what? You had them for the last 3 years and y'all hadn't done crap anyway.
Right, and the smart general managers realize which way the team is going to go and the other general managers don't. You know, it's like anything else. Some people, great at their jobs. Other people, great at their jobs and make mistakes. Best make mistakes. And there are going to be a few teams this year that made moves that definitely made mistakes.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, and we'll be right back with more after this.
Stay up to date on the latest news as it happens on TuneIn.
From American politics to global events, get live 24/7 coverage with some of the top news media outlets in the world,
including CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio.
And when breaking news hits, TuneIn keeps you updated with up-to-the-minute reports and analysis on the biggest stories of the day.
Thank you for joining us with this breaking news report. Really appreciate it.
Day or night, get live news coverage from around the world on TuneIn.
This is the MLB At The Plate podcast. Here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and LaTroy Hawkins.
There are 15 games on Tuesday, and to bring you up to speed on all the action, we got the best day ever, Home Run Tracker, and statistically speaking.
Best day ever on MLB At The Plate.
Who's the best pitcher? You tell me. Who is the best pitcher tonight, Mr. Hawkins?
Best pitcher for me will be the young 24-year-old Cincinnati Reds, Luis Castillo. He held a very good Cubs lineup. 6 innings, 2 hits, 2 base on balls, no runs, 7 punch outs. He didn't get the victory, didn't factor into the decision, but he threw the ball extremely well in a hostile environment.
Well, you know who I'm going with. Danny Salazar, the Indian. 7 innings, 3 hits, 1 run. Here's what I really like, though. 10 strikeouts and no walks.
Yeah, no walks.
67 strikes and 105 pitches. He picked up the win tonight over the Twins. Danny Salazar, best day ever. What about the plate? Who's your man?
My man tonight has to be Mr. Howie, the veteran Kendrick.
Yep.
Picking up some of that slack from the Nationals losing Mr. Harper. He went 2 for 4 tonight with 2 home runs. He's hitting 351.
Can't love that call.
Better than that.
Love it. I'm going to go with a guy that went 2 for 4, 2 runs and an RBI and a walk at the plate. All right, so that's a good night, going 2 for 4, 2 runs, RBI and a walk. But he also started a 5-4-3 triple play. Rafael Devers does it again. The Red Sox rookie third baseman, couple of hits, an RBI, and a triple play turn. Best day ever for Rafael Devers. There you go. Let's talk about the home runs that left the ballpark tonight, because there were a lot of them. A lot.
MLB at the plate, home run tracker.
Max Stassi this afternoon, 108 exit velocity. That's really fast, 428-footer. Lucas Duda, Denard Span, both going deep. Howie Kendrick's first home run went 382. His second went 394. Giancarlo Stanton's 44th home run went 432 feet, 107 off the bat. Wilson Ramos, A.J. Ellis, Jacoby Ellsbury all going yard. Josh Donaldson is homered in 3 straight games tonight. His home run went 382. Nolan Arenado went 410. Gary Sanchez, 407. And Dominic Smith, his first major league home run, went 373 feet for the Mets rookie. Carlos Santana hit a pair for the Indians. His first had 110 exit velo, and it went 423 feet. His second went 101 and 375 feet. Cliff Pennington, Jason Kipnis, and Edwin Encarnacion all go yard. Edwin Encarnacion hit the third deck in Minnesota, but StatCast said it was only 411 feet. I'm calling BS on that. It went 109 exit velocity. Joey Gallo, hardest hit home run, longest home run, 114 exit velo, 459 feet. Jorge Alfaro with his first major league home run. That went 114 off the bat. Only went 415, though. Hard hit ball, though. Nice home run. Congrats, Jorge. Mike Napoli, 416. Ryder Jones, another homer. Mark Reynolds, Keon Broxton, Trevor Story all going yard. Ahmed Rosario went 368. Tim Anderson took the first pitch of the game from Alex Wood. Goes yard, 105 exit velo, 409 feet. Jonathan Scope, Austin Jackson, Matt Joyce, all going deep. Nick Markakis blasting one 429. Matt Olson, Victor Martinez going yard. And Corey Spangenberg does it again. He's got a dozen homers this year. 100 miles an hour exit velo, 403 feet. Let's get a little deeper into the numbers.
Statistically speaking.
LaTroy, check this out. Jose Altuve is hitting 419 on the road this year. The last player with a higher road batting average with at least 250 plate appearances was Harry Heilman, who hit 456 in 1925. Harry Heilman, who is a Hall of Famer, who played a long, long time, I believe. Now I'm going to look it up. I'm going to say he's with the Detroit Tigers. Yes, Harry Heilman, Detroit Tigers, 342 lifetime batting average.
Wow.
Pretty good one. Hit 400 a couple of times, or at least once. What else we got here? We got all 9 Astros starters had a hit today. Team's major league best 17th time with at least 9 players recording a hit this season. Think about that. 17 times everybody in their lineup has had a hit during the same game. They also have 11 players with double-digit home runs. Rafael Devers has 6 home runs since his major league debut on July 25th. Red Sox third baseman had 7 total home runs through July 24th. Aaron Judge has struck out 32 straight games, matching the Major League Baseball single season record for a non-pitcher set by Adam Dunn back in 2012. Is that a problem, him striking out 32 straight games, given that he hit so many home runs?
Not at all, especially not this day and age. Who cares? Yeah. As long as he's hitting the ball over the fence when he makes contact.
Who cares? Who cares? Red Sox 8-run fifth inning was the 4th time they scored 8 runs in an inning this season. Only the Astros have done so more often. That's 5 times. Giancarlo Stanton, 18 home runs since the All-Star break, matching the Marlins single-season record set by Stanton in 2012. So again, he's got 44 homers, six straight ball games. Major league record is 8, set by Dale Long initially, then Don Mattingly, then Ken Griffey Jr. Joey Votto has reached base multiple times in 20 straight games. Only Ted Williams has a longer streak in the modern era. Mm. Danny Salazar came off the DL on July 22nd. Since then, he's got a 1.39 ERA and 46 strikeouts. He's second in Major League Baseball in both categories since his return. Wow, who's first? That's my question. Is it Kluber? Is it it can't be DeGrom anymore.
Got to be the guy in Boston, right?
Sale? Scherzer? Who is it?
It got to be Sale. He's approaching 300 strikeouts.
Since July 22nd, he's second in Major League in ERA and strikeouts. Wow. I don't know, man. It might be the Klubot.
So we got to get somebody on. Now? July?
Ryan, if you're going to throw that on there, you got to look this up for us now, buddy. July 22nd. Since July 22nd, Salazar is a 1.39 and 46 Ks. Who has the lowest? Tonight was the 20th time this season the Cubs were held to one or fewer runs. Holy moly. 20th time? He only had 19 games all such last season, and Chris Davis with a K of the A's, 75 homers, last 2 years with the A's, most in the majors since the beginning of last season.
It's a red flag for the Cubbies.
That is a red flag. That's a red flag. One of many. Again, this is not the same team, folks.
No, not at all.
If you want to keep looking at it, no, it's not the same team. Not even close.
You're listening to the MLB At The Plate podcast, and we'll be right back with more after this. There's hits, and then there's all-time rock classics from the 60s and 70s. With classic rock hits on TuneIn, relive the very best sounds that defined an entire generation. If I ever get out of here, thought of giving it all away. Listen to the greatest rock songs in history with classic rock hits on TuneIn. And now, more of the MLB At The Plate podcast. Here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and LaTroy Hawkins.
Former Major League player and a friend of LaTroy Hawkins, Elliot Johnson joins us now to discuss Giancarlo Stanton's amazing power streak. Elliot, thanks so much for the time. LaTroy and I appreciate you joining the show. Where do you guys know each other from?
What's up, Elliot? Hawk, actually, his grandmother used to, this is no lie, okay, so his grandmother used to drive the bus that used to take my dad from the parking lot all the way into the factory where he worked at the steel mill in Gary, Indiana. So when it comes to Gary, Indiana, you think of U.S. Steel, probably the Jackson 5 is the first thing that comes to mind, maybe some U.S. Steel with Troy Hawkins thrown in there, maybe some Lloyd McClendon, some Kenny Lofton. You know, I don't know if you know about Northwest Indiana, but those are the things that come to mind for me.
Well, I know LaTroy and Kenny are almost kind of related in one way or another, so yes. And now I got you up, by the way, in Arizona, guys. I don't know how you figure into the equation, but whatever.
No, keep listening. It's good.
No,
it's
good.
I'm listening. I actually want to hear this. What's the story?
No, so my dad's a Northwest Indiana guy, so a little bit further east than LaTroy. So, you know, Lloyd McClendon was the legend back in the day, and I don't know if you know this about Lloyd, but if you ask Lloyd, he'll tell you this too. So, LaTroy, you need to get him on there. But he hit a home run every single at-bat in the Little League World Series, or he walked. So he said, if they pitched to me, I hit a home run, but he got walked so much that I guess he only hit a handful of home runs, but everybody was afraid to throw to him. So a lot of good ball players that come out of there, they're just, they don't get as much recognition as like Southern California, so to speak.
Yep. So Elliot, but I signed autographs for, my grandmother would brag, HK, about, you know, her being my grandmother and I'm playing baseball, and Elliot's younger than me, and she's talked to his dad, and I gave Elliot an autograph, right, Elliot? I sent you an autograph baseball, and
LaTroy, you did way more than that. So, like, my dad, I hope you understand, is the baseball fanatic. Like, when you played for the Twins, he didn't like it because, we'd have to go watch you play at the old Comiskey back in the day. So you would leave us tickets. You would sign balls for us. I've got a ball still in my room and at home that's signed by LaTroy Hawkins that says, best wishes, LaTroy Hawkins, okay? And so I used to sign autographs like that because I didn't know any better. But that was the only thing I had going for me. So you signed one for me and all my brothers. I got four brothers. And you signed and hooked us up with tickets any time that my dad would, bother your grandma to get us on the pass list. But we watched you in Chicago as much as we could, not only on the south side, but on the north side as much as we could when you ended up coming over and pitching for them.
So he's playing, HK, he's playing for Tampa Bay at the time, and I'm in the outfield, and he runs over and starts talking to me, and he tells me this story. I didn't know the story. He tells me this story, and I'm like, wow. And, you know, I was like, you know, my grandmother passed away. He's like, yeah, my father told me, and everything. Just, you know, one of those cool things. I signed an autograph for him. He made it to the big leagues, and, you know, we were able to play against each other.
Well, HK, it's bigger than that. So, like, you understand, like, you know, when you're coming up as a ball player, and, you know, you get asked to do all these things, you know, sign autographs, get tickets, all these things, and LaTroy never said no. He said yes every single time. And I can imagine, you know, some random dude, you know, hitting up grandma for some tickets, you know, happens all the time. But, you know, he never said no. He always signed everything for us. And he always took care of us. So obviously that set a great tone for me on how to handle those types of things whenever they would come around. But, you know, and that's why LaTroy is who he is in the clubhouse, and his reputation in the game. Obviously he pitched for 24 years or as long as you did, but everybody else knows LaTroy for who he was and how he treated everybody else. And that's why his reputation is sterling in the game.
You just have a big smile on your face right now, LaTroy.
Well, not because of when I talk to Elliot, I always think about that conversation in the outfield in Tampa Bay when I first met him and he told me the story, you know, so that's why I'm smiling because, you know, you just never know how you make a positive impact on somebody. You just never know.
Well, let me flip it around for you, HK. So I'm a kid, you know, we're outside Wrigley Field and Julian Tavares is walking around with he's got a Aquafina. I can still visualize this. An Aquafina, he's in a suit. Aquafina in each hand, and I said, hey, Julian, you know, I was a baseball rat. I knew who he was. I said, hey, Julian, can you sign this ball for me, please? I'm probably, I don't know, 13 years old, 14 maybe. And he goes, no, my hands are full. So I faced him about 10 years later, and let me tell you, I mean, I was trying to go way back. I only hit a double, but I promise you I wanted to give him the Triple H from second when I got there.
That is terrific. That is absolutely terrific.
I love it.
But you doubled off.
Which way do you want to treat people? You know, HK, you want to treat people like LaTroy, or do you want to just pretend that your hands are full when you're just holding two bottles of water? Like I couldn't hold them for you. You know what
I'm
I mean?
I'm with you, man.
And you hear stories like this all the time, but you know, this is how it goes. You know, and so LaTroy ends up asking the clubby. Clubby came over after that. You were with the Angels at the time. Hawk, and they said, hey, Hawk wants you to sign a bat for him. I'm like, yeah, of course. You know, I don't know what to say. Of course, I just did to LaTroy, best wishes, Elliot Johnson.
Well, Elliot, I appreciate you calling in, man. That's awesome. And I remember that, too.
Yeah, man. I remember what are we going to do? We're supposed to talk about Giancarlo, man. What happened?
Well, let's talk about Stanton. Let's go.
We're all good.
You think he's going to hit 16?
No, no, no.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You're the pitcher, man. You pitched for as long as you did. So he's closing up like that. Are you not trying to throw something moving into him to try and get in there, or is he too far away from the dish for you to change what you want to do?
Well, I always pitched him in anyway, so I wouldn't change what I'm doing. But as you know, Elliot, being a hitter, his success has a lot to do with Marcell Ozuna patting behind him with 27 home runs and 90 RBIs and hitting .307.
Well, at least you're saying it. Yeah, at least you're saying it. Nobody wants to give the kid any credibility. I don't know why. The guy can really play, man.
Yes, he can, and I mean it. You're right. Stanton has to hit the ball, but he's getting better pitches because you're going to pick your poison. You're going to let Stanton kill you, or you're going to walk him and have to face Ozuna with guys on base. And he's clearly having a great year with runners on base and runners in scoring position. So, I mean, you got to pick your poison right there. And, you know, Stanton's healthy. We talked about HK and I talked about him being healthy finally. And he's doing what the fans thought he should have been doing because they, you know, they equate your production with your $300 million contract. And, you know, I'm not surprised he has all these home runs. He's a strong man, and when he puts the barrel on a ball, I mean, he can hit it a long way.
No doubt. No doubt. Okay, so how much credit do you give Jeff Kent for Barry Bonds or, you know, Dusty Baker for flipping them back and forth back in the day?
You know what? Being in it, you know, early on in my career, I didn't understand it, but the older I got, I started to pay more attention to the guys who hit in front of guys and hit behind guys, and it makes a huge difference, especially when you're talking to a hitter and you hear another hitter give his, you know, a lot of his success to, you know, that guy that hits in front of him or hits behind him because, you know, I'm getting these pitches because they know that he's going to try to steal. They want to be quick to first. They want to be quick to home so they have a chance to throw him out, so I'm getting more fastballs. You know, when you start hearing those conversations, you start putting two and two together like, ah, okay. So your success is directly correlated with, you know, this guy having some success in front of you and the guy behind you.
No doubt. Okay, why are you the only one? Why are you and HK the only two talking about Marcelo Ozuna?
Well, you know, well,
he's an all-star, so I think everybody knows who Ozuna is. You know, I don't think it's only us.
Yeah but cool. Stanton hitting the home runs.
Everybody's talking about Giancarlo. Yeah, everybody talks about Giancarlo. Nobody wants to talk about Ozuna.
Well, I mean, Giancarlo's got the 44, though.
Yeah, that's the only reason. You know, we're addicted to home runs. We're addicted to home runs, Elliot. You know, that's just the era that we're in. We're addicted to home runs. But, you know, Ozuna's putting together one hell of a season.
You're right.
One hell of a season.
He is.
Well, they were talking about trading him, man.
Yeah, but Stanton? You got to consider the source. That's Miami, man. Jesus.
I think they need to trade Stanton. I absolutely think they need to trade Stanton. No doubt about it.
What are you going to get for him?
Let me ask you. Well, what are they?
King's
what are
they going
to get for him? You're never going to get anything more than you've ever, and then you could ever get for him. He's going to hit 60 home runs this year, and he stayed healthy. So here's a guy that has been on the DL a lot, right? He's having his best season ever. He's never had a higher stock. They're never going to be able to afford that. That is going to cripple their payroll for years. That contract's going to cripple them. And I'm not saying he's not a great player. He's a great player. He's the most prolific slugger in Major League Baseball at this very point in time. But people aren't packing Miami just to go see him in the first place. So if you can get three, four guys that are going to help you when the next time your window opens to win, I think you have to do it.
But on the flip side,
HK, they don't know if he's going to opt out or not. So like,
that's That's exactly where I was going.
He's not opting out. Come
if you
on.
Trade for him and then he opt out and you just gave up a king's ransom.
Yeah, you know what's
that's
happening?
Not gonna be good.
He's never going to opt out of that contract. He's just not going to do it. He's not going to get that size contract. It's not going to happen. No other team is going to do that.
If he can do what he's doing this year for the next 2 years, why wouldn't he?
Right.
CeCe did it. CeCe opted out and got more.
Yes. you're right.
Yeah.
He did.
He's with Wasserman. I think Wolfie's his agent. Joel Wolf will probably take good care of him and make sure that he surveys the market and gets what he's going to get. But, you know, that I don't know what those escalators are. Is it 26 a year annual average?
Oh,
so
God.
I think if by that point, if he's hitting 60, he's going to opt out.
Yeah, because he's going to be underpaid.
All right, guys.
Isn't that amazing? But it's the way it is.
Hey, Ellie, thanks a lot for calling in, man. It was great talking with you.
Appreciate it.
My pleasure. You guys have me on here anytime, guys. I appreciate it.
You call in anytime.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks,
brother.
You got it. Bye-bye.
That's it for the MLB at the Plate podcast. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn at 7 Eastern each weeknight for MLB at the Plate. During the daily 5-hour show, you'll not only get to hear all of what you heard in the podcast, but you also have the chance to listen live to the games and get the action as it happens. For Ryan and Dustin in the LA studio, and LaTroy Hawkins alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you mañana.
Thank you for listening to the MLB at the Plate podcast. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listenings, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.